Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Well, shalom, everyone. I'm Bill Cloud. I hope you're having a great day today, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today. We are continuing with the series that we call Brother Against Brother, and we've been talking about Cain and Abel. And in the story of these two brothers, we see how these two opposing seeds that we've spoken of in times past, how it plays out in flesh and blood terms. But even though it's in flesh and blood, it's demonstrating spiritual principles. And so in our previous program, we were discussing how that Abel is presenting to us that, or demonstrating to us, the fact that we have to place our trust in the blood of the Lamb. And then the Creator accepts these, our works, the fruit of the ground, so to speak. And so as we're going to continue today, we're going to develop that a bit more in that what it means to be holy, what it means to be kadosh, or set apart, and how we demonstrate that in our lives. And again, we're using the story of Cain and Abel as the basis of this. So as we begin, the first thing we want to acknowledge is that holiness discerns between holy and profane, between clean and unclean. And we find the reference for that in Leviticus chapter 11, verse 47. So again, holiness is what is going to discern between what's clean and what's unclean, what's pure and what's defiled. And holiness is going to, as God determines holiness, it's going to differentiate between any of these clean and unclean things, whether it be food, whether it be holidays, whether it be what you sow in your field. Leviticus 19:19 talks about that. You can't sow mingled seed in your field. So the Creator, in His instructions, His Torah, His Word, He went to a lot of trouble to detail for us what's clean, what's not clean, what's holy, what's profane, what's pure, what's defiled. And He alone has the authority to do that. So how unwise would it be of me to discard the rule book, so to speak, that tells me what He considers to be clean and unclean? So all of this is to say that holiness, in Hebrew, once again, kadosh, to be set apart. Holiness is the line of demarcation between what is acceptable to God. Remember, Abel's offering was acceptable. And what is unacceptable, because Cain's offering was unacceptable. So again, holiness is that line of demarcation between unacceptable and acceptable. And unacceptable would equate to unclean. Unacceptable would equate to unholy. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is a principle that is differentiating between clean and unclean. This is a principle that is taught throughout Scripture from beginning to end. And I might add this, that God didn't change His mind two-thirds of the way into the story. He's consistent. I don't change, He says. The Messiah is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so this standard of holiness has never changed. Anyone who approaches God now has to do it in the same fashion as someone who did it from the beginning. Because if I'm going to approach Him now, there are standards, there's a protocol, and the first thing, the first step in approaching the Creator is to acknowledge that I am in need of a Redeemer. I am going to have to place my trust in the blood of the Lamb if I'm going to be able to approach the Creator and then present Him my works. Then present Him those things that I do, those things that I don't do. Then He will find it acceptable because I have first placed my confidence and trust in the blood of the Lamb. I have first acknowledged that I have to have my guilt and sin removed by the blood of that Lamb. And it's no different than in the beginning, because in the beginning, Abel's offering, his works were acceptable to God because he also brought of the firstling of his flock and of their fat. He also placed his trust, if you will, in the blood of a lamb. And so through Abel and his actions and others who have followed in his footsteps, we can see the proper way to approach God. He made it very clear to us from the very beginning. So then, when we approach Him now, having placed our trust in the blood of the Lamb, there is a standard. There is a protocol. He says, this is clean, this is unclean. And so now, even those of you who are reconciled to me, don't bring things to me that are unclean. Bring me those things that are clean, those things that are pure. Let me read to you from Ezekiel chapter 44, verse 23. This is about the priest. It says, and they, that is the priest, shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the unholy, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. In other words, the priests were always responsible for teaching the people to be able to distinguish between these things. It wasn't just the priest who had to do it. The priest had to teach the people the difference between the two as well, because the Creator wanted the whole body, the whole camp, to be holy, the whole camp to be set apart. And in Paul's writings, we see that God has not relaxed his standards between clean and unclean and where holiness is concerned. Let me read to you from Paul's writings in Romans 12, verse 1. He says this, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, that is kadosh, set apart, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. So I read that to point out that in the New Testament, it's made very clear that God has a standard. He wants only those things presented to them that are holy, those things that are acceptable, those things that are undefiled. You know, in the Levitical era, in the time of the tabernacle and the temple, if a person wanted to approach the Creator, he couldn't bring an imperfect offering. He couldn't bring an impaired or defective or some kind of anomaly with this particular animal. It had to be the best. So we're going to make this presumption that Abel, when he brought his firstlings of his flock and of their fat, when he brought that lamb to be slaughtered, we're going to make the presumption that he understood this and he acknowledged it and he brought the very best from his flock to be slaughtered upon the altar. And again, where would he have learned that from? He would have learned it from his father, Adam, who, as I shared with you in the previous program, learned it firsthand from his father, the Father in heaven. So he's going to bring the firstlings of his flock. He's going to bring the best from his flock, in other words, to be presented. And today, as we present ourselves a living sacrifice, and as we go about our lives living life the way the Creator said, we are to do what is holy, that is set apart, what is acceptable, that is what is clean, what He will respect. That's what we're to present unto Him. And we're not to do things our own way. You know, there are so many denominations that have so many different ideas about how to serve God. And with all due respect, it's not really important to me what this denomination says and what that denomination says, or what that sect says and what that sect says. What's really important is, what does the Creator say? That's what matters. And if we're going to be those people who ascend the hill of the Lord, well, first our hands have to be washed. Our hands have to be cleansed, inferring that our lives have to be cleansed of all of our unrighteous acts and the guilt associated with that. And the next step is the one who has a pure heart, the one whose heart is that of a son, who having been born again of that incorruptible seed, now his life is all about pleasing the Father, doing what is acceptable to the Father, whether or not I understand it, whether or not I can grasp what he's trying to say. What matters is, this is what's pleasing to the Father. And so as we approach him, we learn from Abel, because the text tells us in Hebrews that even though he was dead, he's still speaking to us through his actions. And you think about it, Abel's not mentioned a whole lot in the Scripture. In fact, his name, Havel, Abel, means a vapor, a mist, just a breath. He's so very brief, if you will, in the Scripture. And yet, his actions at the very beginning, according to the writer of Hebrews, still speaks to us. And one of the most important things that Abel in his life and his actions tell us is that he acknowledged that it doesn't matter how much of my works I present to the Creator, As a matter of fact, let me put it this way. If I could keep the Torah, if I could keep all the commandments, the Sabbaths, the feast days, and all the things that the Torah describes for us that His people are to do and not to do, and if I could do it to the letter, if I could do it exactly the way it was written, and yet I disregard the need for a Redeemer, I disregard the fact that I have to be cleansed by the blood of the Lamb, that I would be doing the same thing that Cain did, and my gift would be unacceptable. Because here's what Abel teaches us. Let me read to you from Hebrews chapter 9, verse 22. The writer of Hebrews says this: according to the law, almost all things are purified with blood, and without the shedding of blood, there is no remission. So, once again, to just kind of reemphasize this, if we're going to approach the Creator, the first thing we've got to deal with is that without the shedding of blood, there's no remission for sin. Abel taught us this in the very beginning. And I know I keep saying this again and again, but it's so very important that we let this sink in. That this principle was not first introduced to us in the Gospel of Matthew or Mark, Luke or John. This principle was not first introduced to us in Isaiah 53. But this principle was first introduced to us in Genesis. At least Genesis chapter 4, if not Genesis chapter 3. But the point is, in the beginning, the Creator began to tell us this. He began to convey this message to us, that the first thing that a fallen man needs to recognize is the need for the blood of the Lamb. Now, having acknowledged that, do we ignore that there are good deeds we are to do? Are we to ignore the works? Are we to ignore the mincha offering, the fruit of the ground offering, so to speak? Indeed, no. Here's what Paul says in his letter to the Romans about this, this concept. He says in chapter 7, verse 12, the law is holy. Let me reemphasize that. The law, that is the Torah, is holy. And the commandment, holy and just and good. So, even the New Testament writer Paul says that the Torah, the law, keeping His commands, doing those things He said to do, abstaining from those things that He said not to do, it's holy, it's set apart. The commandment is good, it's just. These are things that we should do. But we do them because we are born again. We do them because we have been saved by the blood of the Lamb. We don't do them in order to be saved by God. And I hope you see that distinction. And so then, ironically, when Abel presents this lamb in acknowledgement of the need for the remission of sin, it's not that sacrifice, it's not that offering that God has respect unto. He has respect unto His mincha. And once again, mincha is the Hebrew word for grain offering, meal offering, fruit of the ground offering. That's what God had respect unto, but because of Abel's acknowledgement of the other. And so that tells us that Abel has the heart of a son. Abel has the heart that wants to please the Father. And indeed, the Messiah Yeshua Himself acknowledged that Abel was righteous. You can read about that in Matthew chapter 23, verse 35. So the Messiah, the Son of God, the Lamb of God, acknowledged that Abel was righteous. So, all of this that we've shared, that's written for us, that's hinted at, alluded to in the beginning, embedded, whatever word you want to use, nonetheless, it's there. And if it was important enough that God wanted to put it in the very beginning so that we would see it, it would seem to suggest that the same principles, the same truths, the same concepts, and the importance that is placed upon them, if it was that vital in the beginning, then that would mean it's going to be that vital in the end. It's going to be that important in the end of days as well. So, with that in mind, I want to read now from Isaiah chapter 46, a concept that we've introduced to you before in other programs, but let's read it again. Isaiah 46, verse 10 says, remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is no other.
I am God, and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand. And so I wanted to read this because we've been sharing about the virtues of Abel, the principles that we see in the very beginning, the characteristics of the righteous seed, the pure seed, the incorruptible seed, the wheat, if you will. We see all of those things in the beginning. And so Isaiah 46 tells us that all those things that he's conveyed to us in the beginning tells us what we are to be expecting in the end. Now, usually we read this within the context of prophecy. And when we think of prophecy, we think of beasts and horns and bloody moons and things like that. But there's much more to prophecy than those things. As a matter of fact, prophecy really is about teaching us of the Messiah. And so in the very beginning, the very first prophecies are about the Messiah, about the Redeemer, about the promise of redemption and the mercy that God extends, and also how to approach God. So he's demonstrating and teaching the actions, the characteristics, the virtues of the righteous seed, the pure seed in the beginning, so that we in the end can know this is what the Creator is expecting. As a matter of fact, we see the same characteristics describing the righteous seed in the end. Let me read to you from Revelation chapter 12, verse 17. John says, and the dragon was enraged with the woman and went to make war with the rest of her offspring. Now, there's a variant reading that says remnant of her seed. And those are those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah. So, notice that the rest of her offspring, the remnant of her seed, is, as I said, another rendering of this. The rendering of her seed, what would that allude to? I believe that that alludes to Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, when God tells the serpent, I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed, between her seed. You're going to bruise his heel, but he's going to bruise your head. And so in Revelation chapter 12, verse 17, what do we see? A remnant of her seed. Let me kind of go off on a little rabbi trail here for just a second. If you've been tuning into this program consistently, then you know just a few weeks ago we were talking about the days of Noah, and we were talking about how the people of that day were the other seed, the corrupt seed. But in the midst of that, there was a remnant of pure seed, Noah, his three sons, and their wives. The Creator always has a remnant of pure seed. And so in Revelation chapter 12, verse 17, we see the remnant of her seed. And how does it describe them? As those who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah. Please notice, it doesn't say that they keep the commandments of God, period. It doesn't say they have the testimony of Yeshua, period. It says that they not only have the testimony of Yeshua, they not only acknowledge the need for the blood of the Lamb, but they also keep the commandments of God. They also present the fruit of the ground, so to speak. They also present their works because they have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah. And it's really important that we see that they are called the remnant of her seed. If you will, the pure seed, the righteous seed. Because, you see, folks, when we are born again, to be the righteous seed, we're going to walk according to his instructions. We're going to do what he said do. We're going to walk in obedience. And when we walk in obedience and we understand through his word what is holy and what is not, what is clean and what is not, then we're going to live according to what is holy and what is clean. And when you know what is clean and when you know what is holy, then you will automatically be able to detect what isn't. Now, if you've steered away from the quote-unquote Old Testament and you haven't read that, you're not associated with what the Creator defines as being holy and clean, then you're going to be open to a lot of suggestions. You're going to be open to a lot of people's opinions, and you're going to be open to a lot of mixing and mingling. But when you go back to what he said in his word, this is clean, this is holy, when you recognize that, then you automatically are able to detect what is not holy. So then, Abel's actions testify of his righteousness. They testify of the fact that he is righteous, that he is walking according to God's holy standards. And if that's the case, then Cain's actions, or maybe even better, inactions, testify of his unrighteousness, of being unholy in his wickedness. And so it should be clear why God did not have respect unto Cain's mincha, or his bloodless offering, because that's all he presented. Cain didn't acknowledge the need for the blood of the lamb. And remember, it's unlikely that he would have been ignorant of this, because Abel knew. And if Abel learned from his father Adam, it's logical to presume that Cain did as well. And so really, it's more Cain's inactions that tell us about him, even more so than his actions, even more than just offering that fruit of the ground offering. It's what he didn't do. It's what he didn't acknowledge that testify of his wickedness. So now, let me read this to you. You're very familiar, or should be, with this particular passage found in James. Chapter 4, verse 17, it says this: "To him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." Now, the Bible doesn't tell us when Cain began to rebel. It doesn't tell us. But I would presume that it did not start overnight. It didn't happen overnight. And just like an apple seed takes time to germinate, to grow, and to produce fruit, every spiritual seed does as well. And so that seed of rebellion, whenever it was sown into Cain's life, it began to grow and it began to germinate. Now, it eventually did produce its fruit when he was taking Abel's life, when he was lying, when he was doing all these wicked acts. It did produce its fruit, but the seed had to be planted back there somewhere. And I'm going to recommend to you that when we acknowledge the need for the incorruptible seed in our lives, we're going to be able to detect the corruptible seed. When we know the truth, we can detect the lie. But when we reject the truth, by default, we embrace the lie. When we reject the good seed, by default, we embrace the other. So at some point, Cain began to reject the teachings of his father, the instructions of the Creator, and he began to go his own way. And here's what Genesis chapter 4, verse 5 tells us. As a result, God did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. He was angry because God didn't acknowledge his offering, because it was unacceptable, bloodless. And Cain got very angry, and he was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And he was jealous of the fact that God had accepted Abel's, even though Cain knew everything that Abel knew. It's just he didn't acknowledge it. He didn't put it into practice. Even God questions his unwarranted hostility. Let's read this in Genesis 4, verses 6 through 7. It says, "So the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it.'" In other words, let me paraphrase. Here's what God is saying to Cain. "Cain, why are you so angry? You know the truth. You know what to do. You've been taught the same thing your brother Abel has been taught. The difference here is your brother Abel acknowledged it. He did it. He has faith. He's presented that to me. And that's why I accepted his offering. Now, Cain, seeing that you know what is right and what is good, I'm admonishing you to do what is right and what is good. And if you do that, Cain, then I will accept your mincha as well. I will accept the fruit of the ground that you present to me as well. If, Cain, you acknowledge what is good, if you acknowledge the protocol, if you acknowledge that you too have need for a redeemer, that you too need the blood of the Lamb to cover your guilt. Because if you reject that, Cain, then sin is crouching at the door, ready to pounce on you. But you can rule over it. Just do what's right." In other words, what we see in the story is Cain knew to do good, but didn't. And to him, it was sin. And so consequently, God did not accept his mincha offering. And as we see, Cain, who rejects the good seed, who rejects what is holy, what is right, who rejects the admonition of the Creator, by default embraces another word, another philosophy, another seed. And now that seed, as we're going to begin to see in this ongoing story, that seed not only is going to take root, not only is it going to kind of come up out of the ground and put forth the blade, but very soon it's going to put forth its fruit. And he's going to call his brother out into a field. And because of his jealousy and because of his rejection of what is good, he embraces what is evil. And then he manifests that. He produces its fruit. And we're really going to see how these two opposing seeds takes on the form of flesh and blood and how it plays out through history. Join me next week as we continue teaching about these very fascinating things. We'll see you then. Shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BillCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.